Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge.
Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting.
Today is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. We will also seek to be salt and not pepper pickers. I want you to consider that you are a curator of the news. You actually control your own news feed. You control your own social media feed. You control what you consume. You also control what news you share with others in terms of your own platform and in terms of the way you talk about the things that you talk about the things you talk about. There you go. There's a sentence for you. This first thing in the morning. So as you listen or watch or consume the news today, I want you to ask yourself whether or not the purveyors of the news that you are consuming, like, right, the people who are purveying the news, who are producing and then disseminating the news that you are choosing to consume, that you are curating, I want you to ask yourself, are these people who are seeking to shed light, or are these people who are just picking peppers, right? So Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, but that is not what the news media is supposed to. That's not the function. It's not pepper picking is not the function of Christians in the culture. That's not our function. Our function is salt and light. And so I want you to ask yourself, as a Christian, have I become a pepper picker? I definitely have some friends in my Facebook feed in particular who have become pepper pickers. Like, all they ever post is pepper, 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 pepper. I got to tell you, I got enough pepper. I need some salt. Where are my salty friends? And so sometimes Christians will have a tendency to say, you know what? I am functioning as salt. This salt is illuminating. I am seeking to shed light in dark places. And I understand that. And I understand that that is a role and responsibility of the Holy Spirit. But we have to check our motives every once in a while, or every day, or every second. Check our motives and say to ourselves, am I actually passing along this information in order to shed light and be salt? Or am I really functioning in this moment, in relationship to this story, as a pepper picker? So ask yourself, as you are consuming and curating the news of the day, is the person who is passing this along seeking to be a purveyor of the truth? And then ask yourself if they're seeking to be a purveyor of the whole truth. Because there's a lot of half-truth out there, and there's a lot of mistruth out there, and there's a lot of my truth out there. So ask yourself, if I line this story up and its contents and the way that it's presented with reality, am I not just getting the truth, but am I getting the whole truth? Or is there half of a story here? Is there one side being presented? Is there something being really grossly misrepresented? Do I know something about this story that obviously the purveyor of the story doesn't know? Maybe the people involved, maybe the institution involved. Ask yourself those questions, because just because someone is telling you some partial truth does not mean they're telling you the whole truth. And then ask yourself, is it nothing but the truth? There is news, and then there is commentary. There is news, which is information-based, information sharing, and there is commentary. And commentary and opinion are, in fact, not news. They are sold as news today. They are published on news websites. They are published under the heading of a news agency, but they are not news. They are commentary, or they are analysis, or they are opinion, or they are editorial. All of those words should ring alarm bells in your mind that this is not news. This is not news. This is a purveying of an opinion. This person is seeking to influence the way that I think about something in what they're sharing and the way that they're sharing it. So I lift up Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 to 16 today in terms of our own calling and sending. You are the salt of the earth. This is Jesus to us as disciples. If the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, put it on a stand, Let it give light to everybody in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. And so let's just be mindful today that we are, by God's calling and Christ's encouragement and the Holy Spirit's enabling, we are sent forth to be salt and light, not just pepper pickers. All right, I'm going to turn to the headline news of the day with Tommy Binion from the Daily Signal. That's up next here on Mornings with Carmen.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I'm sitting here on Capitol Hill. Well, it's a long, long journey to the Capitol City.
That wonderful little music means that Tommy Binion from within the environs of Washington, D.C. and all things that are Capitol Hill is back with us. Hey, Tommy, welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you for having me back. It's great to be with you.
It's great to have you. Okay, my list of things to talk with you about is insanely long today. I really would love to start with the Democrats having this event in California where all of their prospective nominees were present, all save but one, and that would be Joe Biden. And so really a lot of the news that's out there centers on the fact that he wasn't there. But I felt like the big news item was that people booed when the former governor of Colorado suggested that socialism was not the way forward for the United States of America. Anyway, did you have any like moments of surprise out of that? And then we can talk about, you know, super positive things.
Well, I don't know if it's a surprise anymore, but the passion or the excitement of that portion of the Democratic base that turns out for political events, that organizes for the primaries, and this is not by any stretch everybody that votes in the Democratic primary, but it is, you know, it's the party volunteers. They are extremely progressive. They are socialist. They are liberal. And so you have this dynamic unfolding inside the Democratic primary. There is a temptation and small rewards for candidates that are going to run all the way to the left. But that lane got crowded very, very fast. There are several avowed socialists in the primary. And then the rest of the Democratic primary voters, you know, they're more moderate. Their views are more moderate, and they have really one choice, Joe Biden. And so he occupies that lane, and he has shot up in the polls. So that is a really interesting dynamic. I think it has staying power. It might be that there are 15 people running as socialists and one guy running as a moderate.
Mm. Okay, so we're going to pause there. Because you and I are going to have lots of opportunities in the 2020 cycle to talk about the differences and the nuances. But let me just remind people, I had an hour-long conversation with Bruce Ashford last week on the topic of socialism and why it's bad, why every time and every place it's been tried, it's not only failed, but it has failed the people of that place. And so please go back and grab that podcast at myfaithradio.com on the Mornings with Carmen page and understand that socialism is really a false religion and that that's really what's being promoted at the deepest of levels. Okay, Tommy, let's talk about the possibility. Now, this is going to be surprising to people, the possibility of some bipartisan work between Ted Cruz and we would just call her AOC. Is that even fair anymore to just call a congresswoman by her initials, but that's what she goes by. So, but tell us what's going on here, the possibility of these two working together on something.
Yeah, so it sort of unfolded on Twitter, which is classic AOC, if you will. But she and Ted Cruz mutually agreed that they would like to support a lobbying ban on members of Congress once they're done serving in Congress. And a few other congressmen, one from the Senate, one from the House, jumped in. And over the weekend, they sort of right there in public view formed a pact to introduce a bill to do this and to help each other out. Now, that's great. They're working together, Democrats and Republicans. They're finding common ground that they're putting their differences aside. But I don't want this audience to think that this is a bill that might have a chance at being enacted. It's very unpopular. And I might even say, as a lover of the First Amendment, that it's unconstitutional. I'm hard-pressed to imagine lobbying being classified as anything other than speech by the courts. And so potentially this bill that they're pursuing won't even reach the threshold of constitutionality. So, yes, it's encouraging. I hope it happens on more and more policies, and hopefully they find a better one next time.
So let's talk about school choice. Is there any hope of bipartisan work on school choice? Oh, you know what? Can we take a one-minute break and then come back and talk about school choice?
Yes, we can.
Okay, 1 minute, and then we're coming back looking forward to next school year with Tommy Binion and the question of school choice.
If I should speak, then let it be of the grace that is greater than all my sin.
So if you go to thedailysignal.com, one of the things you're going to find there is that satisfaction is high in D.C. over their school voucher program. So, Tommy Binion, school choice, school vouchers, brief us in on what's happening and what you think is next.
Yeah, I think choice is the silver bullet. I think that when you introduce competition and mobility and freedom into any system, it's going to get better. When consumers, and in the case of schools, we're talking about parents and students, can choose the better product. They will choose the better product, and that will introduce competition. This happens all of the time in our daily lives. Do you choose the gas station that's 10 cents cheaper or the gas station that's maybe a little bit cleaner? That's your choice as a consumer, and you get to weigh those factors, and then those two entities that are competing for your business are going to do better and better and better. That's what school choice is. There are lots of ways to do it. Many states are setting up education savings accounts, tax-free ways for you to save your income to pay for an alternative, maybe a private school, maybe a charter school for your child. In D.C., there's a voucher program where some of the taxpayer money is coming back to students to be able to take that voucher and go to the school of their choice. It's incredibly important. And it is the way that we are going to achieve the education system that this country deserves. The Democrats, the teachers union, they fight hard against school choice. They fight hard against competition. But, you know, you asked what's next. There is a proposal on the federal level to provide a federal tax credit for students to go to other schools. I'm skeptical of that. I would like to see this happen on the state level. You know, Washington's intervention in education is disaster, and we should not expand that footprint at all. We should shrink it as much as possible, and we should watch and encourage the states to do the best. I think the best education system is one where the federal government is completely out of it, where dollars and decisions are as close as possible to the actual schools, not up here in Washington, D.C. So I think what's next is more movement to school choice in the states.
So for folks who are mindful that we're supposed to be praying for those in leadership, let me just remind everybody to be praying for Betsy DeVos. She tweeted that she's in favor of a school choice initiative there in the state of West Virginia. And so I just want to lift those things up when they happen and remind people to be praying for those who are in leadership at the national level, particularly when what they are encouraging is exactly what Tommy is talking about, which is that this would remain something that states that are closer, you know, right? Every state is unique in that it lives closer to its own people than the federal government ever will. So I think that's part of what you're saying, Tommy, is that, you know, let's keep it close to home where parents and those living in communities can have a greater sense of control over what's happening with our own kids. Hey, can we have a quick conversation about the U.S. economy? Because the Wall Street Journal just posted that the United States expansion is now at the 10-year mark. We arrive at that point this month. That's pretty incredible. So here's the quote. This month, will become the nation's longest on record in terms of U.S. expansion, eclipsing the decade-long expansion of the 1990s. More than 20 million jobs have been created so far in the expansion that started in mid-2009. The net worth of American households has increased by $47 trillion. And yet, they're the walk-off of this piece in the Wall Street Journal is what could go wrong: trade wars, interest rate mistakes, and a ballooning budget deficit. Trade wars would be the one that I would say is most top of mind for people. So let's use that to touch on tariffs.
Yeah, I think that the economy is going gangbusters, and we should be very, very excited about that. It could be better. It could be much better. The trade wars are sort of a dark cloud hanging over us. And there's two. There's one with China. There is a sort of a pending economic / trade deal with China. And there are lots of things that we are trying to get the Chinese to do, not the least of which is to quit stealing our intellectual property. But as those negotiations are going on, both nations have stood up tariffs on certain percentages of imports and exports to the other nation. And it's a tit for tat, and they are ever increasing. More went into effect over the weekend, and then there's a trade war with Mexico. All of a sudden, last week, President Trump announced tariffs that will come into effect starting next week, starting at 5% and ratcheting up to 25% by October on everything coming from Mexico. And the reason for that, by the way, is a good one. He wants them to participate in helping us keep our border secure. And to do that, they've got to secure their border. I think that is a reasonable ask, but I think that the tariffs may be just a bit too devastating economically. So when you've got these two things going on, just one more thing I wanted to mention about tariffs. They're not a tax that Mexico or China will pay. They are a tax that those consumers will pay. If you tax production at any point, whether it's at the point of importing the good into the United States, if you tax raw goods, any of that, all of that cost gets passed on to whoever's ultimately buying the product. So those tariffs are a tax that we're going to pay. Now, my hope is that China plays ball, strikes a deal with the president, Mexico steps up to the plate, helps secure their border, helps secure our border, and these tariffs go away, and all of a sudden the economy, which you mentioned is at a 10-year expansion point, is just unleashed even more.
Which would thrill me. Okay, can you – I know this is a surprise topic. Can you – so I'm reading today that Google, Facebook, Amazon, Apple are all under like sort of these antitrust investigations, I think possibly as of like yesterday. And so there's aggressive U.S. antitrust action moving against big tech. Can you just remind us what antitrust is, and then we can return to this subject at a later time? But I want people to be able to read today with some information.
So antitrust means that there is a monopoly in an industry where a company has gotten too big, where they have so much power that they can set the price while being immune to market forces. So in other words, there's no competition. You can only buy that product from these people, and therefore they can set the price. We have a history in this country of using antitrust, but it is very controversial. It is a power that the government sort of claims for itself to be able to do that. But I think, you know, free market economists are always skeptical of that. Now, here's how it applies to big tech. You may think, well, you know, Facebook is ubiquitous. Maybe Facebook is a monopoly. Amazon is ubiquitous. Maybe they are a monopoly. I do think that they face competition. But you also have to ask yourself, what is the product that they are actually selling? Facebook is not selling social media. They are selling advertising targeted at certain types of consumers. So in other words, you are the product. Internet advertising has lots of competition. But here's one other thing to consider as you look at these stories. Facebook, Google, Twitter, Amazon, the reason that we are looking at them for antitrust, the reason that we are looking at them for potential regulation, the reason that there are all kinds of policy interest in those companies is not, it's not because they're doing anything wrong, but it's because consider the tremendous amount of power they have over us. Consider how much time you spend on Facebook, how it, you mentioned curating the news, how it decides what you see in your news feed. They have a tremendous amount of power over us as individuals, over our society, over our culture. And as a culture, and as a secondary note, potentially the federal government, but most importantly, as a culture, as a group of individuals, as a society, we've got to grapple with how much power they have over us.
Okay, so I think that the only one in that list, Google, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, that in maybe in my view produces a quote-unquote physical product is Apple. Everybody else is moving information around and marketing and advertising and delivering stuff, but they're not actually making anything. So I don't know. I'm going to hear you and say, this is a conversation I need as a consumer of the news and as a citizen of the country and as a person who uses all of these. This is something I need to pay attention to as it unfolds. And thank you for helping us understand such complex things this morning. Tommy Binion from The Daily Signal.
Great,
you can check out what
hey,
he's...
Carmen,
yeah, absolutely.
Before you kick me off, let me just commend an article to the listeners here. It's by my friend Star Parker. She's talking about a situation at University of Northwestern St. Paul where the Young Americans Foundation chapter is being shut down because they invited her to speak. It's concerning, I believe, in free speech on college campus. I also believe in free association. So maybe all the listeners go check out that article and see for yourself and decide for yourself on that issue.
Okay, and I'll return to that in just a minute. Tommy, thanks so much for being with us.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Okay, so I'm going to take a minute to read what the president of the University of Northwestern St. Paul has said in response to the article that Tommy Binion just referenced. This is an announcement posted at the University of Northwestern St. Paul, UNWSP.edu website on March the 29th. Recently, two politically conservative organizations and several conservative Christian news outlets have suggested that the University of Northwestern has changed its biblical position on the sanctity of life. This perception is based upon a series of misunderstandings and miscommunications. And as we are working with student leaders of a specific student club regarding their desire to invite a particular speaker to come to UNW, an email meant for internal communication as a part of an ongoing dialogue between staff and students was distributed publicly. Initially, the university sought to protect those staff and students involved in the misunderstanding by limiting our response. However, it's become clear with the amount of activity on social media and the opinions shared by some conservative news outlets that we must further address the situation. So I would encourage you to go to unwsp.edu under the news header and read the statement, the presidential announcement by the University of Northwestern St. Paul back in March. This has been an ongoing conversation here on the university campus since February. There are a series of things there on the unwsp.edu website that you would want to read in relationship to this. And again, trust those you know. Clearly, we are pro-life. Clearly, this program is pro-life. Clearly, I platform pro-life speakers all the time. Clearly, you know that that is our heart of hearts. Okay, next up, we're going to be talking with Rosemary Stein from the Christian Medical and Dental Association about all kinds of really things, including baby Sabie. If you heard this story last week, you know that she is like the premiest preemie of all times. So that's next up here on Mornings with Carmen.
What's at the root of the false claims against Israel? This is Jim Garlow. Quite simply, anti-Semitism is the common denominator. It is a hatred of the Jews because they remind people of the God of the Bible, all he represents, and all he has said. Make no mistake, this is a demonic enterprise. It goes back to the Garden of Eden when God put enmity between the serpent and the seed of the woman, who was Jesus Christ. Consequently, Israel is under daily attack, sometimes by bullets and rockets, but more often by slander and lies. On college campuses, anti-Israel events have become all too common. Students have bought into lies because it seems to them a social justice issue. But even more disturbingly, far too many so-called Christians have also embraced the lies. Clearly, they need to become well-versed in Scripture so that they might know the truth. This is Jim Garlow.
sugar helps the medicine go down. The medicine go down.
Dr. Rose is back with us. You can follow her on Twitter at, or on Facebook, excuse me, on at Rosemary Stein MD. Rosemary Stein MD on Facebook. Dr. Rose, welcome back.
Hey, Ms. Carmen.
It's so good to be with you. Oh, it's so good to have you here. Okay, so kids and summer and life and all of these things are such fun things to talk about. Last week, I saw this article. I mean, I think it was kind of all across all pro-life social media that this little girl known as Baby Sabi is believed to be the world's tiniest surviving micro preemie. She weighed as little as maybe an apple. Other people are saying a juice box. When she was born. And what I would love for you to do is give us some medical perspective on preemies. And, you know, she's like the preemiest of preemies we've ever encountered. And she was healthy enough. I mean, she's now gone home. She was born 5 months ago and she's now gone home. So talk with us about the challenges that preemies tend to face and then give us your perspective on this particular story.
Oh, absolutely. We have several micro preemies at the practice. And it's a beautiful testament to life to see baby Sabi survive. One of the things that I thought about when I saw her name is they actually probably meant that, you know, she wasn't going to live long. So she was baby say bye, you know, hello and goodbye. And there she was. She refused to say goodbye because she had something to say to all of us in the world about being a 23-week preemie. Well, I have a couple of 27-week twin preemies that come to the practice. And they were probably, well, they weren't quite as small as baby Sabi, but they were pretty close because they were twins, and twins are just naturally a little bit smaller. And they're doing fabulously. Of course, the first few months were very rocky, but now they're nearing 1 year of age. And they are fabulous, and they both have each one has their own personality. One of them is what I call baby grumpy because he's always complaining and he's looking at me like he's judging me and doesn't like what I do to him. The other one's baby happy, so he's always smiling. And he's happy even to get his shots. He just sort of whimpers a little bit and then he smiles at me like, it's okay, Dr. Rose, I'll be all right. And each one has their personality and just something to add to our existence. I say that, you know, you almost don't need to go out to nature to be able to enjoy the goodness of God. All you have to do is see a baby and enjoy the baby and his smile and the way he moves and the way he responds to you, because they are truly gifts of God. And it doesn't matter whether they're 23 weeks old and you only get to enjoy them for a few days, or if they are 23 weeks old and they are soldiers like baby Sabi. They are both to be cherished and loved and enjoyed. So I love the article and I love the testament to life, no matter how young and, you know, no matter how old. We should be enjoying our very young ones and our older ones who are frail and probably maybe not as pleasant as a baby is.
So I have this other story, Dr. Rose. We had this preemie story of baby Sabi and the particular challenges that families face when they have preemies. But, you know, but people are facing challenges throughout life. And there was this story about 13-year-old Damien who is suffering from a particular disorder that means he needs a kidney transplant. But he also is a kid who doesn't have a home. He doesn't have a stable home. So the story is actually about how his teacher adopted him in order that he could have a stable home, in order that he could remain on the transplant list and hopefully get a transplant. So it's a really super sweet pro-life story about being pro-life for all of life and every life throughout life. But I would love for you to just share with people, what are the kinds of challenges that families who have a child who needs a transplant, just tell us what kind of challenges that they're facing so that we can be good brothers and sisters in Christ to those families.
Oh, boy. You know, it's so difficult because the family is depressed and they're anxious and they don't know if their child will survive. So that affects them, obviously, in so many ways. I've heard somebody say that when a child is up for transplant or major surgery, you walk around in a daze for a very long time, and you could actually just walk into the street into traffic and get hit by a car, and you wouldn't even notice it because of the thoughts that are going around in your head. And so to even think that a kid that's in that circumstance doesn't even have a parent to love him and to worry about them and to come home and smile at them because, oh, you're still here with us, is heartbreaking. And then somebody that's, you know, not even family to adopt him and say, you know, you need a stable home. I'm willing to give that to you. I'm willing to change my life and maybe financially be stricken because, you know, your life is valuable. And I'll make it valuable to me because nobody else has made it valuable to them, is an amazing testament of love. We have a little boy who's on the transplant list, and he's on a heart transplant list because he has a medical condition that's extremely rare, and his heart has been damaged by his condition. And he's been in the hospital now for about, I think, 5 months. And this little guy was just the happiest little dude, and he would just smile at us all the time. But he started getting depressed because his family was, and he started to tell them, you know, I'm not sure that I'm meant to live. But here it is 5 months later, and he's still happy. And I just have to finish the story, Miss Carmen, because it's so cute. But one, I forgot the name of the famous basketball player that decided to come into his room and to say hello to him because of being in the transplant list. And little Adam was so happy to see this guy that he sees on TV come in and say hello. And he says, well, if you got so happy to come in for me to come in and say hello, how about I do that, you know, whenever I'm around in the hospital? And Adam said, yeah, that'll be cool. Well, now what does Adam do? When this basketball player comes on TV, he leans back, he puts his hands behind his head, and he puts his little feet up, and he says, hey, guys, you got to be all really quiet, because that's my friend on TV, and he's going to come and see me next week. And that gives him such enjoyment. It's like this basketball player has adopted little Adam and that has given him a reason to live. We don't know how long he'll live. And these little guys, we don't know how long they'll live. But just every day is a gift. And enjoy them and help them enjoy life.
This is Dr. Rosemary Stein. She is a part of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. We love talking with her. You can follow her on Facebook, Rosemary Stein, MD. And Dr. Rose, when we come back from the break, I want to talk with you about this post on your Facebook page about a child named Juan. So you are listening to Mornings with Carmen. We'll be right back. So have you ever read a book by its cover? That's actually what it means to judge a person without ever really knowing what's going on inside them or who they really are. And Dr. Rosemary Stein, Rosemary Stein MD on Facebook, has a post there on May the 26th about a young man she knows whose name is Juan. The world was reading his book by its cover instead of really seeking to understand what was going on inside of his head. And so, Dr. Rose, why don't you tell us Juan's story?
Oh, I'd love to. He inspires me, as does his mom. Long time ago, he's now 15 and a fabulous kid. But long time ago, when he was an infant, his mom brought him into the practice, and he was just different. And he had a rash on his face that sort of put himself, he wasn't a nice kid just to look at. So you didn't love him just at first sight. You sort of had to build that love for him, sort of as a person that's not as attractive as others, and you have to build that love. And so his mom brought him to the clinic. I said right from the beginning that there's something very different about him. And his speech was different, and the way that he socialized was different. And when he was growing up, he was falling behind supposedly in school. And we had a tutoring program that he would come to. And Hannah said, that kid that you sent us, he's really really smart. He will sit there and read books when the other kids are playing and goofing off. And I said, really, Juan? And I started to take more of an interest in him. And I said, Mom, how's he doing at school? Well, he's struggling, and the teachers say he's not very smart, and we can't do a lot with him. And those problems escalated. And when the problems escalated, they started saying that Juan should be in an exceptional child program, which in North Carolina means that he wasn't able to learn like other children learn, and some different resources should be invested. So they were keeping everything very simple for him and reading to him. And I said, but you don't have to read to him. He reads to himself and he enjoys reading. But the school said, no, he's really not reading at a grade level. I'm thinking, this is really strange. I know for a fact that Juan can read well because he's read to me and he's told me what he's learning. And this kid loved the weather ever since he was like 8 years old. He loved the weather. And so more time passed and he would do great in science, but supposedly couldn't do math and couldn't read well. And when he got to middle school, they told him, they told his mom that they would kind of pull him out of regular school and put him in a vocational school where he would just learn a skill. And I said, no, we can't do that to Juan. Juan is a really bright kid. You're just not understanding his sort of intellectual language. So I sent one of my nurses to go in there and sort of fight for Juan. And she said, you're not doing this to this kid. And Dr. Rose will be happy to come in, but she's seeing patients. So I'm standing in for Juan and for her. And the teachers just were so surprised that we gave from our clinic to come in and to battle for Juan that they gave up. They said, well, we'll just let him fail, which is an incredible thing to say about this little guy. Well, 3 more years have passed since that we'll just let him fail and you'll see what happens. And he brings me in his report card, straight A's. He's one of the smartest kids in his 10th grade class. But he also brought me a notebook. It was all math problems that he does for fun, just for fun. So what did we do to get him to this point where he understood his capacity and his potential? I brought out a copy of Gifted Hands by Ben Carson and told him read it and explain it to me because he had a problem expressing what he was learning. So he got really excited about the story because like Juan, Dr. Ben Carson had a problem with people thinking that he wasn't smart. And he said, he's like me, Dr. Rose. Everybody thinks that he's not smart, but he's actually really smart, like me. And mom is working for me, and his mom worked for him. And I said, that's right, Juan. And people are judging you by the way that you express yourself. So we're going to get it to where you're able to tell a story, and people understand how smart you really are. So today, in passing from 10th grade to his junior year, he's all A's. He still wants to be a meteorologist. He wants to be the best meteorologist in the world. And he said to me when I saw him a couple of weeks ago, he said, Dr. Rose, everybody thought I was the dumb kid. I'm not the dumb kid. I'm actually the smart kid. And it just made me smile from ear to ear. I walked out of that room. I told everybody, there were tears coming down my face. I said, my Juan has actually proven to the school that he is the smart kid, that nobody's going to push him down. If anybody's going to let Juan down, it would be himself because he wouldn't work as hard. But he's working hard and his mom has too.
Dr. Rose, thank you for the inspiring story. You guys can find the story on Facebook at Rosemary Stein MD. Thank you so much.
I'm so glad to be able to tell that story and for parents to have hope. Your kids
Absolutely.
Have a potential.
Amen. Amen. All right, we'll be right back. Okay, so you and I are going to show no partiality. We are, in the spirit of Jesus Christ, not going to judge people as books by their cover. We are going to be people of the truth who seek to discover the uniqueness of every individual and what they have to bring to bear and to offer. Whether or not they ever demonstrate the kinds of intelligences that we tend to prefer in our culture and in our society. So let me just say this. If you have a kid who is smart in ways that are not schoolbookish,
You probably know that. You probably know the particular intelligences and love languages of your own child or grandchild. And let me just be quick to say that vocational education is right for some people, and we need a lot of people who are competent in the trades of this day. So don't misunderstand or mishear what Dr. Rose was saying. Just because she is celebrating the particular intelligence discovered in one child does not mean that every child is going to perform in that particular way. And so let's just be mindful of that. Let's allow people to be, their own unique self in terms of how God has created them in his image. I have learned more about God and grace and myself and my own need for grace from a child whose cover is quite different than what the world might prefer. And what's inside that cover of that young man now, a little boy, is quite different than what we have expectations of in our culture. And so you have to actually get to know the person who is inside and learn what their intelligences are and see what you can learn from them about yourself and about God and about the fallen reality in which we live and about redemption and about hope and about grace. And so you may have a kid who was a preemie. You may have a kid today who is struggling. You may have a kid who doesn't have the kinds of intelligences that the world prefers at this stage of the game. Let me just say this. Love the kid. Love the kid. Love the kid. And just be thankful that God welcomes us as little children. You are listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'm Carmen LaBurge. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.